Oh, turn. Call the next case.
May please the court. Good morning. It is still morning, and I'm Eric Weitzel with the law firm of Gillespie Hart. All ties are in Weitzel in Tazewell. Virginia Council of Record for Swords Creek Land Partnership. It is my pleasure this morning to introduce to the court Alvin Imch, who is a partner with Jackson Kelly, PLLC in Charleston, West Virginia, admitted to practice in that state, who was admitted pro hac vici by this court to appear as co-counsel of record for the appellant. Al will present the appellant's argument in this case.
All right. We're happy to have you. Welcome to Virginia.
That's just 1 minute.
You may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Your Honors. Let me say on a personal note, again, my name is Al Imch from Charleston, West Virginia, with my colleagues Lee Floyd and Blair Gardner, also with Jackson Kelly. But may I say that it is truly an honor for me to be making my first appearance before the highest court of the great Commonwealth of Virginia. This is an important case. This case involves a decision by the lower court which held that the plaintiffs, being the owners of the surface and the gas rights with respect to the property involved, are entitled to all of the escrowed royalties under the Virginia Gas Act that have been generated as a result of the well operator with permission gained by a lease entered into between our client, Swords Creek Land Partnership, and the gas operator.
Let me ask you this. What is ambiguous about the severance fee in this case?
I think there are two arguments, Your Honor, that we make with respect to the deed. Both of these arguments are directed toward us, meaning the coal owners in this instance, being titled to all of the royalties from the coal bed methane production. One is, I believe, Justice Mims in an earlier case said ambiguity means that are there two ways to interpret the language. Clearly, in cases I've seen from this court as well as in this case, there obviously are two arguments about the interpretation of the language. So we would argue, number one, that the language is clear. And that's language that says we get basically the coal and other things and the impertinences that go with it, that includes coal bed methane in its entirety and that we get all of it. The other argument is it's ambiguous, which is what your question goes to, in which case one has to look at the intent, the circumstances surrounding, the fact that you construe the document against the grantor, that the grantor grants as much as the grantor could possibly grant, etc. I want to assure the court to begin, though, that we do not ask for it all. We have good arguments for it all, but we are suggesting to this court that the result that was obtained in the lower court's decision, is not consistent with long-time property law in the Commonwealth of Virginia. It is not consistent with the expectations and the understandings of those people and companies throughout the Commonwealth who have tried to order their rights and order their businesses in accord with that law down through the years. It is not consistent with this court's decision in 2004 in Harrison Wyatt. Most importantly, we submit to the court, it is not fair and it is not just to seek a result or obtain a result that says that the coal owner has no interest, no protectable interest, no interest that has value when we get, as we have in this modern age, to a time.
Who would decide the equities between the coal owner and the surface owner?
Your Honor, I would suggest to you that if this court sees fit after looking at this case and the facts and arguments that we and the plaintiffs have brought before it in this case, determines to make a ruling along the lines of what we asked for at the end of our reply, which is to say that our law and a fair reading of the law says that gas and coal have interests in coal bed methane. gas and coal, gas being synonymous with the surface in Virginia. It's not in West Virginia, but it pretty much is here. That they both have an interest. It's an arguable interest. It's a protectable interest. It's an interest that deserves to share in the value that modern technology and modern economics and the modern commercial environment have now placed on coal bed methane.
Well, counsel, that's a policy argument. This is a contract case.
I don't think it's a policy argument, Your Honor. It has policy implications, certainly, but I think it is simply an argument that recognizes what the law of Virginia has to say about this particular issue. The law of Virginia...
What's the language of the deal? Where you indicate plain language or ambiguity. Where is coal bed methane in the deal?
Therein always lies the problem, Your Honor. It's not anywhere...
That's why I think you're making a policy argument in terms of fairness and equity.
Every case that I have seen that talks about or mentions coal bed methane, certainly the ones that come up before, let's say, 1980 or even afterwards, and I'll mention some of those for Your Honor as well. All of those cases, if they mention it, recognize the absolute inalienable right that the coal owner has with respect to the coal bed methane. There is no doubt if we were sitting around the table today and it were 1887 or 1890, there's no doubt. And no court has ever said coal does not have the absolute right to destroy the coal bed methane in order to get the coal. No case has ever challenged that. No case would challenge that. It didn't have to be mentioned, Your Honor, because it was never thought about until that particular item had value. I submit to the court that from 1887, when this severance deed was written, up until the 1980s, coal bed methane was economically, technologically, and commercially inseparable from the coal. Inseparable from the coal. And the case law, all of the documents, everything that's been written about it, were they to be looked at, and you asked anyone the question, who's got the coal bed methane in 1920, 1930, 1940, 1950, there wouldn't have been any issue. Everybody, they wouldn't have to talk about it. It was a pertinent right. The coal had it. They had the absolute right to control the coal bed methane. Let me say again, I submit to you that there are very good arguments, and they have been made, certainly they've been made in this case, mainly on error number one, about the deed language, that for those kinds of reasons, and these are accepted, these arguments are accepted in other jurisdictions, and we submit have not been rejected by this court. These arguments mean that control, the absolute right to do what you need to do with the coal bed methane, something that's been understood for scores of years, means that you get it all. But our clients certainly are coming to this court to suggest that what's needed here, what's needed in this environment, is something that is going to assist in the purposes that the Virginia Gas Act clearly was passed to pursue, which is we need to develop coal bed methane. That needs to be something that gets done. There have always been traditional conflicts between gas and coal. But let me submit to the court, this is the trial lawyer's take on property law. The surface owner, the owner of the gas, gets something with respect to gas. What is it? What the gas owner really gets is the right to go into the real estate where the gas lives, gas being a free spirit, can't really be owned until it's captured, but gas gets the right to invade the real estate where the gas lives and capture it and sell it for money and then pay some royalties to the entity that gave them that right. Coal gets the corporeal, I love that word, interest. It's real estate. Coal is real. It exists. We own it as a corporeal estate, and we get the right to go in there and get it, of course. The overlap here and the problem is we, the coal owners, own the real estate where the coal bed methane lives. It's the raison d'etre of coal bed methane. It wouldn't be there if it weren't for the coal, and that's the real estate that's owned. The gas owner traditionally always has the right to go into the the sandstone or the shale or wherever else it is that natural gas normally lives,
Council,
and capture it and sell it.
Counsel, aren't you arguing as if Harrison Wyatt was never decided?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Aren't you arguing as if Harrison Wyatt was never decided?
Your Honor, it would be impossible to ignore Harrison Wyatt.
But you haven't mentioned it in 10 minutes of arguing.
I'm ready to do it, Your Honor. Thank you for the opening, which I think is an apt analogy because, Justice Powell, footnote 3 in Harrison Wyatt gives you the window into what we believe is the extent of that decision. It indeed has been the big roadblock in these cases and in other cases, and there have been many, and they're cited very aptly by the plaintiffs in their briefing that have been cited by the lower courts since Harrison Wyatt. And those decisions in the lower courts have been, they get it all. Again, that the gas owner gets it all. Ignore coal. Ignore the history with respect to coal and coal bed methane. Gas is going to get it all under the Gas Act. Footnote 3 says, the trial court in that instance had decided that the surface owner's rights to coal bed methane essentially don't exist until it's been separated from the coal. And the surface owner's rights in coal bed methane do not include the right to go in and frack that coal seam in order to recover the coal bed methane. And that's what's happening right here.
But it doesn't indicate they don't own it as it exists in the code. It just says they don't have the right to access it without the coal owner's permission. Isn't that the import of footnote 3?
It's an important aspect of it. It certainly is, Your Honor. And again, that's a big part of our argument here. That access, that control over the coal bed methane, that fact, going back to Clinchfield Coal in 1936, which said oil and gas traditionally passes with the real estate, passes with the land. That's all we're saying. We own that real estate. We own that coal seam. And the well producer and the oil and the Gas Act in Virginia recognize the fact. The commercial elements here all recognize the fact that if we want to go in and recover, capture the coal bed methane, we need to get a bundle of rights. It's not, ownership is a word, Your Honor, and it gets used a lot, so does title, interest, right, etc. But to recover the coal bed methane and sell it, you have to have a bundle of things. You have to be able to go on the surface and do stuff. No problem there, certainly not in Virginia, and it's normally they have the gas rights. You have to be able to develop the gas, separate it out of the real estate, and sell it. Gas certainly has that right. But you have to have the real estate, too. And you have to use a technical legal term, mess with somebody else's property. You have to get access to somebody else's property, that being the coal seam owned by, in this case, us. But nobody... Sorry.
I want to go back to my question. I haven't heard the answer yet. You're saying that the coal seam owned by the landowner is not subject to it all. Well, how much are you
at? I'm saying we do ask for it all, Your Honor, as an argument. We think those are good arguments in this instance. But we recognize the economic reality of today. And in order to get on with it, we see and accept that a fair result here would be a ruling by this court that acknowledges that gas and coal have an interest and each is entitled to an equitable share of the royalties.
That's my question. What would that be?
50-50. And I say that again, and I don't think this is a part of the record, but I would submit to the court that you don't have to dig very deep to use a coal mining analogy to find that what's happened commercially, and most of these disputes have been settled by the parties commercially in this economic and commercial environment, is that coal and gas have worked it out to share the royalties 50-50.
And we would have to overrule.
How do we do that under a deed, a 100-year-old deed? We are not a legislature.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And I can't tell the court how far you believe that appropriately you could go here.
Not very far.
Well, the minimum we're asking for.
Wouldn't we have to overrule our own decision in Harris Wyatt?
We
at
don't,
least to the extent that we said a conveyance, et cetera, of coal shall not be deemed to include coal bed methane?
In
we,
a case
we at least
which,
have to do that, wouldn't we?
Well, in a... No, I don't think so, Your Honor. Again, in a case where, based upon footnote 3, it certainly appears to an outside reader of the decision that that case presented to you facts involving the recovery of coal bed methane from a void, from a mine that went into a void, a gob void that was post-mining. Coal mining was done. It was completed. And the footnote also indicates that the court was not rendering any decision about the issue that had been decided below, which was the gas people don't, the surface owners' rights don't include the right to invade the coal seam and frack the coal to get the coal bed methane gas, and that's the decision we're asking you to make, that they don't have that right belongs to the coal owner, and the coal owner has an interest. How far, Justice Mims, you could go as far as what that interest means, I'm not sure, and I've used up all of my time, and I didn't get to reserve any.
Thank you
very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Peter Glubiak. I'm here today with my co-counsel, Mr. Terrence Shea Cook, and I have the honor to, I had the honor to be here a little over 10 years ago on the Harrison Wyatt case. I think it appropriate to comment at this time that there is, as has been pointed out, the matter of the Virginia Gas and Oil Act, 45.1-361, which in our opinion controls today's events, that the coal company is in a position where they have to agree with a well permit application. The gas operator then, with that permission, takes it, and in this particular case, with all of these units, force pooled into a deemed lease situation. And the operative important point to be made is, at that point, in this case, CNX, as the gas operator, was obligated under the terms of the statute to escrow the money in a discrete escrow account administered by the Virginia Gas and Oil Board, pending a determination of ownership. Of course, there's only three ways to do that. I want to comment on this commercial agreement.
Can I ask you a question? When you say ownership, the statute talks about ownership of the gas, right, as opposed to anything else?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the point here. We have two discrete accounts. We have the co-owners and conflicting parties, as determined by the Gas and Oil Board. We have the co-owners, or the coal estate, and the gas estate. Based on Harrison Wyatt, carried through 2010 with the statute that's been referred to, and probably close to a dozen cases, including a case which was decided yesterday in Buchanan Circuit Court, the owners have been determined pursuant to case law and the statute to be the gas owner. In this particular instance, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We don't, Your Honor, and that's the key point here. This case is that horse has left the barn. At this point, in this particular case, as is the case with every single case in Southwest Virginia where they're developing coal bed methane, there is a key point that's been missed here. The coal owner, in this case the Appalachians, Swords Creek Land Development Company, went to the gas operator and consented to stimulation of the wells. In other words, their fail-safe mechanism is, without their okay, there can be no development. Why they did it, I can't tell you. I can speculate. There was discussion in the hearing. Frankly, given the history of this whole thing, I think the coal owners were somewhat arrogant in their negotiating posture. They had the complete right, the complete ability to negotiate with the coal owners and the gas companies and work out a deal where something was set up, but they did not. They assumed they would probably win this case and they would be the owners of the gas. It turned out, under this court's opinion, Judge Williams' opinion affirmed by this court, they did not. We've had 10 years of cases.
Are you saying then that the coal owner not compensated for irrigation into their homeland?
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is they have a perfect right and a perfect ability to negotiate that in a fair and open matter, arm's length transaction. They had the whole card, if you will. Without their permission, their consent to stimulate, which had to go, which was a starter to the process of getting this money in escrow, without their permission, their consent to stimulate, none of this would have happened. They had the opportunity at that time, in a completely open business-like transaction, negotiate whatever they wanted to do.
So you're saying this is a fact-specific case, as opposed to a case where, going back to zero, where the coal owner and the gas owner can agree to leasing it so they get to the gas.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your
what
Honor.
What would happen if the gas owner, assuming the landowner is over there?
Yes, sir.
And the coal owner can't agree. And suppose they said, well, you may own the gas, but you can't come to my coal bed and get it.
In that instance, the as you're indicating, the coal company holds the trump card. However, the facts on the ground are, throughout Southwest Virginia, this was all done 20 years ago. In fact, there's an argument to be made that Swords Creek had consented to the coal operator, who happens to be Range and now Consol, that in fact they consented to stimulate years and years, decades ago. But nonetheless, there is an agreement between CNX, or at the time Pocahontas Gas, and Swords Creek, where Swords Creek in the lease says, fine, you develop the gas. At that time, they had the opportunity. At that time, no one knew who the owner was. But this court, the General Assembly, and many circuit courts since that time have decided it's very clear. As between the two parties, the coal owners and the gas owners own it. The U.S. Supreme Court, Justice Kennedy's opinion in 1999 was pretty clear. Gas is gas, coal is coal. If you don't convey, if your predecessor did not get gas, if they got coal, they didn't own the gas, and that's where we are. What's important is you've got a statute that says a conveyance, reservation, or exception of coal shall not be deemed to include coal bed methane. That's where we start. We had a case. We had numerous circuit court opinions. General Assembly decided it still wasn't clear enough, so in 2010 they passed a statute. And since that time, with 100% accuracy, every circuit court that has addressed this, in fact, since 2004, every circuit court that has addressed this has found that the gas estate owners own the gas, the coal estate owners do not. And
assuming we decide in the same manner, and there's no prior consent that's factually at issue in this case, the two parties simply have to come together and reach a deal, or nobody gets any money.
But, Your Honor,
is that
again,
right?
The coal owners had the opportunity to do that and chose not to. They could have
I'm talking about in the abstract. Two people are at loggerheads. I own it, but you can't get it. What do? You have to work it out, or nobody gets any money.
That is an abstract position which doesn't take into account the facts on the ground. The facts on the ground are that these two companies, CNX and EQT, have pumped billions and billions of dollars worth of gas.
Well, my hypothetical was that there weren't any facts on the ground. That's the whole point. Absent all of the things that you're talking about that you think alter the result, just a pure abstract question, you own the coal bed methane, they own the coal, you're at loggerheads unless you come together.
But I guess I understand what you're saying in the abstract, Your Honor, but in the real world, the coal companies have consented to stimulate time and time. In fact, to my knowledge, all of the
They don't have to. That's the point.
They don't have to sign the consent to stimulate, but they do.
Right.
The parties come together.
At this point, it's pretty clear, having case after case after case, a Supreme Court decision and a statute, it's pretty clear who owns it. And that's what Judge Moore in this case happened to find. Once again, I understand the abstract argument, but the fact is the abstract is after the reality of what happened. The reality of what happened was the coal companies, for whatever reason, I can't know, in August of 1991, signed a lease with CNX and said, you can do it. We give you consent to do it. If we own anything, and significantly in the lease itself, it's essentially a quitclaim lease. If we own anything, You know, we get it back. And what they're doing today is arguing it's not fair. Well, that doesn't carry a whole lot of weight given the fact that they're the ones who made the open and fair business decision in August of 91 to roll the dice, gamble that they were going to win. Turned out they didn't. So I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been with this for a long time, and abstract is hard.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at it through the lenses of your case. I understand. Yeah. But both parties have told us in submissions that there are many, many other cases like this all throughout Southwest Virginia that aren't your case. So we do look at it in the abstract to determine what kind of a rule we're going to adopt. So I understand your position. You need to understand ours.
I do, Your Honor, and I'd say the system is set up. There's a statute in place. There's case law in place. The system works. There are two conflicting parties, as between those conflicting parties, designated with the full permission of the coal company, or that we wouldn't be there because they wouldn't have had, if they didn't grant the consent to stimulate and lease, we wouldn't be there because there wouldn't be gas produced. That's their trump card. They have a perfect right to negotiate that, and frankly, they did not do that. The rest of it is almost noise. So you've got to decide, you know, at this point we have a system. It works. People rely on it. The courts have uniformly determined it, as I said, as late as yesterday. I go back 10 years. This court decided in March of 2004 that the gas owner, the gas estate owner, owns the gas. That is the system. That's what people rely on. And there's absolutely no reason in the interest of some fairness to change what's been policy and as has been indicated, is part of the General Assembly's legislation. I mean, we have a system. And all we're asking the court to do is affirm Judge Moore's considered opinion based on what he felt to be the evidence, not make up a new system based on something that's not legislation, and award the gas to the gas owner. The coal owner has to fend for themselves. And I'm sorry if that's the case. It's not unfair. They're the ones with the trump card. They played the trump card. And in this case, in a business decision, it didn't turn out to be a good one. So I thank you.
All right. Thank you for your argument. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.